You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I am your host, Connor Colson. This is Minute 107. This minute begins with Prometheus crashing into the Juggernaut and ends with Shaw and Vickers running away from the Juggernaut. And I am joined this time by Simon Haynes of the Fanboy Crossing Network, or channel, if you will, where you can currently find the Kung Pao Minute. Hello.
Greetings. that's your fault podcast. As well. Yeah, thanks for having me, thanks for bringing me on in probably maybe the worst 3 minutes of the movie.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I basically wrote you in because I've been watching these minutes, just going, it's giving me nothing. I've got nothing to say. Please help somebody.
These are the dumb action tropey minutes.
And they're the dumb action tropey minutes. So I thought, who loves to bitch about dumb things? who gives me a daily Zack Snyder? Yes, I know who can handle these minutes with me.
Who has just recently launched a podcast about a really dumb film?
Yes. So yeah, we should probably talk about your Kung Pao minutes. So movies by minutes, for those who don't know. It started with the Star Wars minute, and then that spun off into all these other things. I didn't know about that, actually. So there's a few... It's almost like evolution, you know? Mm. I'm not connected to, like, the main... The origins. I'm sort of... I've offshooted from the Matrix minute. And then you didn't know about Movies by Minute until my podcast, so you're kind of an offshoot of my show.
Yeah. It's all interconnected.
All interwoven, man.
When I first heard about the concept, I'm like going... It's one of those things you go, that sounds interesting. How are you going to keep it up?
Yes. When I first heard about it, I went, how in the hell, Noah, challenge accepted. I'm going to see if I can do this. 2.5 years later, I'm almost done.
I think you've probably picked one of the best movies to really deconstruct.
I think so too. It gives me a lot to work with, except for these minutes.
Yeah, well, that's why you have a loud mouth like me, come on.
Yeah.
I have things to talk about this movie, because I'll be honest, I'm not entirely sure if I like this movie or not.
I don't know either. And that's how I feel about it.
And that's why I think it's fascinating about this movie. On one level, I can appreciate it as art, but on another level, I can't appreciate it as storytelling.
Yeah, I absolutely understand that, where it's... You know, if someone asks me, what's your favourite movie ever, I'll probably say, yeah, the Alien prequels. But then they'll say, well, what about it is so good? And go, well, actually, there's a lot about it that doesn't work. But I also enjoy the hell out of them every single time. Mm. It gives you a lot to think about. And maybe that's the most important thing a movie can do. Because, I mean, who's talking about the RoboCop remake? Like, it just does such an adequate job.
I wouldn't go that far, but...
It's the most adequate film. It's not bad. It's not so bad that you can rant about it and have a good time, like Batman vs. Superman.
Hmm.
But it's not good either. It's just... Oh, that was a movie that... Total Recall. Did that happen?
I don't know. It's one of those...
The remake.
Oh, you did a movie. Good effort.
Yes. A+ for effort.
I was actually expecting to really... Okay, quickly, RoboCop remake. I was expecting to hate that film.
Yeah, same.
And I just came away going, well, I've seen it.
It's
not good. It's not terrible.
There are moments in it that I really love.
Yes.
I think there's concepts, you know, the part where he's being taken apart and he's...
Oh, I hate that.
Oh, it's so gruesome. I love it.
It's great on the conceptual level until you realize that in order to adequately explain the human hand, they had to have connective tissue from his brain to his arm, but there's no musculature.
All I can think of.
There's no musculature at all.
But it looks kinky, right?
Yeah, it does.
It looks... I don't know. Why would you... I think it's a reference to, in the original RoboCop...
Yeah, lose
the
arm.
We save the hand, lose the hand.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I think doesn't work with RoboCop, the remake, is that they try and slowly strip you humanity and then have to rebuild it in like 5 seconds. Whereas in RoboCop, the original one, and we're going to talk about Prometheus eventually, but in RoboCop, the original one, his humanity is almost stripped away in like the first 20-odd minutes.
Yeah, it's a very stark contrast.
Yeah, and it's about him regaining his humanity. Mm-hmm. And there's also the Jesus allegory, because Paul Verhoeven.
That movie... I think RoboCop is perfection. And I think... I'll tie this back in. So, I don't think the Alien prequels are perfect movies.
No.
But it's not because of, and some people think that, you know, it's genre or maybe it's the content. No, because it's the movie called RoboCop. Schlocky 80s movie, you know, over the top violence, all of that. It is the perfect movie. Mm. It is literally just moves along. I watched it the other day. Perfect pacing. Mm-hmm. There's not a moment spared. Everything builds up to...
Well, it's very tightly written as well.
Oh, so good. Mm. So, yeah, I don't think...
And here's the irony. The remake was written by the same guys. They rewrote the RoboCop script for the remake.
What the hell?
I don't know what happened.
The Prometheus explodes as it makes impact with a Donkadon. Even the front part of the ship... Which I don't imagine there's anything combustible. You probably don't, where the people are, you don't want to keep combustible things. So
it's a very Hollywood trope. Well, then again, it maybe miraculously hit the explodable part of the Juggernaut.
Yeah,
that's... The donut in space. It is a great special effect.
It looks great, though. But, immediately the front is hitting it. As we can see, there's no...
Engines are recessed and there's four engines, isn't there? And so, yeah, it's...
Starts there, yeah. Well, at least we know that the guys died instantly and it wasn't...
I'm actually going to give the movie the benefit of the doubt here, because I think the explosion happens on the Juggernaut itself, because if you look at the frame beforehand, it's like the explosion comes at the bottom.
It's coming out of the Juggernaut.
I think it's coming out of the Juggernaut.
It could be...
You listen to this, Ridley? I just praised your movie.
Well, we just defended it. That's the fascinating thing about action, especially in movies, is that when you're watching it as it's intended, someone's coming at you and you are so sure that, you know, so say, for example, the running in a straight line. Now, we will cover that soon.
Yeah, we definitely will cover
but
that.
But I notice they're not actually running in a straight line. It just looks that way.
No, I reviewed this last night as I was doing my research of the 3 minutes I'm on. And there is a point, where they do start veering off on an angle.
Yeah, they're trying to get away.
But the cinematography really doesn't help that.
Yeah, and... I've actually encountered this a lot I love conspiracy theories. I love all of that sort of stuff. And there's a few... Okay, so the most famous one is JFK, back and to the left. And people have analysed that footage a million times.
Yeah, the Zapruder footage.
To the point that they've actually kind of distorted what actually happens in that footage. The other one is from the Boston Marathon bombing. There's a guy running along. He's called Green Shorts, I think. This old guy wearing green shorts. And he throws
I've heard vaguely something about this.
He throws a bottle behind him. And it looks like the woman behind catches it. And people tried to read all this weird stuff into it.
Oh.
And then someone actually broke it down, like frame by frame, really enhanced, zoomed in on it, went...
They did the Blade Runner.
Yeah, it turns out that she didn't actually catch the bottle. It was just the angles. Angle. And so, right now, I've watched this ship explode so many times, but it only now occurs to me that, when they animated it, it looks like the force is actually coming out from the Juggernaut, not from the Prometheus itself, so...
Well, I didn't really catch it until you put the stills on. I was just like, let's just go back, let's review the evidence, text is king, so we've got to, go back and, step by step, and I think it's just one of those dumb Hollywood things I just did, but maybe the actual special effects artist will probably thought, if we make the explosion looks like it's coming from the Juggernaut, and it is supposed to be the thing that's being taken down.
And then you get this secondary explosion here, which...
Yeah, that would probably be when the Prometheus' engines and fuel are...
So actually, it's not full Michael Bay logic where you shoot a car and then it just explodes for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
You shot a car door. Why would it explode?
Bay only speaks in the language of explosions, and when we finally are able to learn that language, we'll realize he is this generation's Shakespeare. I can't even finish that sentence.
I really like this wide shot as the collision occurs in midair.
Mm.
I think it might have something to do with the fact that I grew up with Westerns and I just love negative space. The moment you just see these tiny figures in this huge environment, be it a desert or just, the sky as it is here.
Well, it's such a great perspective. From like ground level, this big thing, this big threat has been eliminated, and it's like it's a momentous event, and it's also a sacrifice. Yannick and the crew have sacrificed themselves to stop this greater evil, and there's also the terror of it for Vickers and Shaw, because they're now stranded.
And that's what I think in this angle, I think, must be pretty close to where Shaw and Vickers are.
Yeah.
Because, well, that's the... Because
is that the med pod, or is that
So the med pod's in this. So it's Vickers' suite, and that's the pod.
Yeah.
Why is that not just her life raft? Why the fuck do you need the little coffin thing that she gets in?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah, this is where I think the movie falls apart for me. It becomes... I can explain this when I do my deep dive into my feelings, but I think this is the part of... This particular part of the movie, these minutes... is where the movie gets really contrived.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem with this ending. I think my big problems with this movie is the ending and to a certain degree the beginning. Like, there's this huge chunk in the middle which I think is, like, great. And I think the other two could just be edited slightly and you would have just tweaked it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, where does it actually go off the rails? Is it the vagina snake moment?
Yeah. I think when you find out that... what's the faces? The two that go astray. I think that's where the movie starts to lose me.
I think it's all right for them to be afraid.
That's fine.
Because they didn't actually know what they were getting into before they came here. So, okay, I can accept that.
It's the moment in the movie where all the smart people start being extremely dumb.
Mm.
And every decision that should have been smart becomes immediately dumb.
Yeah, I know some people say that the Quiet Place is... The characters don't act logically, but actually I think they do. For a horror movie, by horror movie standards especially, I think they do a lot of very sensible things. I know some people are like, well, why did they have a baby? That's so dumb. I checked out at that moment. It's like, well, okay, life's complicated, man, and maybe birth control has expired by now. I don't know.
Well, that's... I think that's why, like, say... Because I just recently rewatched Aliens for the first time in probably decades. Last time I watched that was VHS. I honestly forgot that the alien ship looks like the Juggernaut. It's been that long. Oh, wow. So when I finally rewatched it, I was like, oh, yeah. And also I think it's because it was HD and I'm watching it on a big screen and I can finally take in the detail of the Juggernaut in Alien.
Yeah.
And there's another bit I want to talk about the original Alien, about the engineer. And then watched it and I was like, oh, wow, I can see it in Chris Clear now. That ties it really nice. And then when they're getting to the ship with the Juggernaut, when they're getting to the ship with the engineer, and there's the elephant thing, the elephant in the room, is the snout. And
Why have I never made that pun in this show?
Because you need me to come on here and make stupid puns. And here's one thing I thought about. I don't recall you mentioning it at the time. I know you mentioned about the elephant thing. I don't think it's an elephant. I think it's a facehugger.
I think it's an aardvark.
Oh, it could be an aardvark.
No, that's pretty good though, actually.
Because
it's coming up,
it's covered its face. I know it dropped the other facehugger drops off and all that, but that could just be because it's in stasis or whatever as part of the shipbuilding. Because you got to remember, the engineer has had its chest burst in that scene.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got the figure. That is so cool.
This is a holographic action figure.
So if you imagine that...
I had never considered... There's some grooves and stuff around the head, which kind of look like fingers.
Because in the movie, it's like, it's like about there is where you can see something's burst out of his chest, alluding to the chest burster in the actual movie. And this is Alien 1.
Mm.
This is before, like, engineers and the scripts and everything like that. So I think that was just a way they alluded to, like, the face hugger and the chest burster being part of the design. Really cool. This is my own opinion. I've not researched and read on that, but I think that was just maybe that thing. And that could be why.
Well, there's film analysis. You don't need evidence. Just vague allusions to things that are in the
I film. Never noticed that before. And it was actually listening to you talking about the engineer and the nose and everything. I do like the theory that there are, like, multiple engineers and that. That's why I like the idea that even the aliens themselves, they're all manifestations of the host. That's why, like, our classic xenomorph is very much a human built. It takes on traits of its host.
That's why I wish we saw the Ultramorph just from the perspective of, you know, I'm not one of those fanboys, like, I just want to see the biggest, coolest xenomorph ever. But just so that you make it clear that... It takes on the traits of the host. Because we haven't really seen that other than Alien 3.
Yeah, Alien 3 is the big deal with that. Because they basically went, we're going to have a dog do it. Because we want to see something cool. Want to see something new and different. The other technical one you've got is the human alien from 4.
Which I actually ended up...
It's technically not the same thing.
Accidentally ended up defending the newborn.
Yeah.
In an anime day special.
I think it was a good idea. It was probably not... I think there's the point when the tongue comes out and everyone just was just like, it's just a giant space puppy.
Like kind of yowling kitty cat noise.
It's an interesting movie.
Yeah. Oh, so before we move on from this, what was I saying about this particular shot? Oh, yes, we were talking about how this is probably from Vickers and Shaw's perspective, and I think it does create this sense of vulnerability.
Mm.
And I don't... Actually, it holds on this for about 6 seconds, so I think you do have enough time to just kind of think about, wow, you know, this just... There's nothing. You've got the temple, there's a mountain, and nothing. And that's where they're going to be trapped for two years.
There's a great horror vibe to it of, oh, they survived. Oh, they got nowhere to get off. And there's no communication.
Honestly, I feel like there was another draft ahead of this that they should have done. This feels like second draft. Third draft would have probably been where they just nailed it, where I'm seeing all these... connectivity issues is what I call them, where... So, yeah, Vickers making the extra step of being in the escape pod instead of just being in the module.
Mm.
Get rid of that, put them together, have her fight the squid, the trilobite. Mm. Gotta stop calling it the squidly diddly, but I love calling it that.
That thing I thought was stupid. Like,
it doesn't really make a lot of sense, although I know they're kind of harkening back to the oversized face hugger that Giga originally did.
I love the scene. I love the self-extraction scene. I think that is probably the best scene in the entire film.
So awful. I love it.
It's grotesque. It's awful. It's panic-inducing. It's cringe. And it's great horror.
Mm.
But then when it grows up to be basically the Kraken, it's just like, what...
Release the Kraken.
Yeah, I know we're jumping ahead on your thing, but...
Well, no, this is actually...
Because it's only like five...
referring to moments before and after in terms of where does Vickers end up? Because right now...
Mm.
Well, technically, we are looking at Vickers' module.
Yeah.
Inside of that, we are technically looking at the giant trilobite. Yeah. It's just not visible to the naked eye.
Well, that's when I thought, okay, when they eject the pod, it felt... Again... It felt contrived because they're like going, oh, we're ejecting the pod so we could have the pod on the ground.
And we need Vickers to be on the ground to run alongside
Shaw. We need to kill off everyone but Shaw.
Character, warehouse, and clear out.
Yeah. But Vickers could still be on the ship and accomplish the same thing.
Even if I'm very certain they didn't really plan out the prequels. I think Ridley Scott. No. I wish I had an impression of Ridley Scott. I can't really do one. But I want to do an Alien prequel series. I want to show the origins of the Xenomorph. I want to mostly focus on androids and the engineers. And that's about it. And they've just made it up as they've gone.
I think they threw so much stuff at the wall. And some of it stuck incredibly well, and I think the stuff that stuck incredibly well they didn't intend to stick, and that's pretty much David.
Yeah, he was just sort of the breakout star. Everyone, every critic pretty much walked away from the movie going, Michael Fassbender fucking owns this movie, holy shit.
But he was also the point of view character at the beginning of the film,
and he should have stayed that way, I think.
And that's where I think a lot of this movie falls apart, is when it's just like the movie front loads David. And then he's kind of just swept away. But he's the character we immediately empathize with. We get all the character building moments with David.
Yes. Yeah, I think those first 10, 20 minutes until the crew wakes up are just solid. They're
beautiful.
They're masterful. Then there's almost no dialogue. And then
the only bit I didn't like,
wake up in their assholes.
Yeah, the only bit I didn't like is when, because I just don't like this as a trope, is when someone goes into a dream and it's all shot in the third person.
Yeah. Why would she be dreaming about herself?
If it's a dream, that's one thing. But if it's a memory, which is clearly intended this to be a memory.
Yeah.
It's like, no, people memorize from the first person.
Yeah, it would be coming straight out of her eyeballs. So
it's a good setup for like some of the themes of the film, but that's about it. And that's the thing, this film has got some good theming going on.
But I feel like if they had planned all these movies out, then your second movie would be, as I mentioned in previous minutes, you would have Yannick, Chance, Raoul, Vickers, Shaw on this planet, or maybe they repair Dave. Well, you could have a whole movie where it's just...
They could have still killed off every single character by one, like Ripley. They could have kept the repetitive theme going, but they would have needed to have... I think they needed to have kept the ending vague in this film.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's kind of open-ended, but...
No, but I mean, like, keep it actually deliberately vague. Spoilers. When we find, when we see that, oh, there's a second ship.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. Because you don't know what they're going to encounter when they get there, but yes, they definitely know there's a way off the planet, yeah. So... Yeah, I...
If they'd kept that vague, I think that could have fed better into the sequel.
I like that every one... Well, almost every one of the Alien movies. I think 3 and 4 do their own thing, but Alien, Aliens, and then the prequels are all basically the same plot.
Yeah.
You know, there's a signal in space, humans go to investigate, there's an android that you may or may not be able to trust, there's, you know, like, everything, beat by beat, is roughly the same. And I would be okay with that if we had a movie in between this and Covenant... We had the remainders of the Prometheus crew trying to figure out, do we trust David? He's the only one who can get off this planet. There's all of that tension. He gets reassembled. He kills them off one by one. Maybe experiments with nitrogen.
I think this story and that story would make for a great maxi series.
Mm.
Like a HBO 12-episode maxi series.
Yeah, like a Watchmen, yeah.
Pan it out, pace it better, really delve into the issues that you're trying to address and stop trying to rush an ending.
And that's something I find that really Scott's doing more and more lately is he, you know, like some of his older movies, like Gladiator is slow, so goddamn slow, so long, nothing happens. But then the Alien prequels and a lot of his films from probably 2010s onwards, just really tight editing, real fast pacing, to the detriment of the film, I feel.
Mm.
I think, what was that, All the Money in the World, which a lot of people didn't see, but it's really good.
I haven't seen that much Ridley Scott, but everything I've seen of Scott, I've enjoyed. I actually like Gladiator. I haven't seen it since, like, 2000 or something like that.
I guess I'm not really into that genre to begin with, but...
I like the hero journey stuff. I am terrible. I'm trash.
You're trash.
I'm trash.
Yeah, it seems like his pacing has become more and more, I wouldn't say frenetic, but just it's very fast and it's almost like, whoa, slow down. Like, you actually had some really interesting stuff here.
Mm.
Prometheus is nearly 2 hours, but I feel like you've got way more in there. Either you
have
a sequel or you...
It's actually a well-paced movie. I think it's got a slow... It does good horror. It's got a very slow build-up in, like, the... first act, and then the second act does bring that pace up, but I think the third act is where it starts to fall apart, because I think that's when it's built up so much stuff, but then it's failing to kind of answer some of these internal questions.
And I think that's, third acts in, I think we mentioned this, but we've talked about this privately, yeah. Is just how modern action movie third acts are garbage. They're almost just it's a prerequisite. Like, okay, I guess we'll just have some shit blow up and run away and scream and I don't know. Whereas, tying back into RoboCop, if I do keep in all the RoboCop stuff...
I think you should keep in the RoboCop stuff. Yeah. Gotta keep it pure.
It moves perfectly. I never feel like, here's a second act, here's a third act. It just flows so beautifully, and by the time you are at that... I think it's like a factory where Boddicker,
yeah,
and his crew, you know,
that's a great action scene.
It's perfect. It moves along perfectly. It's still telling a story. It's not like, oh, now RoboCop has to fight some people, like the RoboCop remake, where it's just, oh, here's an
he's just got to fight an entire building full of people.
Yeah, it's like a side scroller game where you just got to go off all the floors.
But it's also like in like the remake. There's that last act is the scene where Michael Keaton as the CEO, he's implanted the fourth directive. It's a rehash of the first movie where it's like, oh, RoboCop can't kill him because he's an executive. And the first movie, that's like the second act fall. That's the second act downfall, which works very well. In the remake, it's in the third act right at the end, and it's just like, oh, we've got to try and contrive a way to get past this in 5 seconds.
Mm.
And it doesn't feel well-paced.
I feel like with the third act of Prometheus, okay, so in concept, the Juggernaut is going to head to Earth, it's going to bomb it. That's a great threat. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yannick and all that sacrificing themselves, cool. That could have been a really emotionally powerful scene.
This should have been the end of the film.
This is where you end it.
Yes.
It could have just been Vickers and Shaw standing there just going, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
More credits.
Yeah.
That would have been way more impactful.
You could have done something with the med pod, the Vickers pod. And actually, that's where I was expecting it to go when I first watched it, to be honest. I thought, oh, they've blew up the ship. Oh, they've introduced the pod when they said, like, you know, someone can live on this pod for years.
Yeah.
Like, they've really established that this pod is important and it's going to be, like, a life-saving thing for these characters. Oh, no, they just get crushed by a donut and then...
Yeah.
We can discuss that in episode 3.
This shot right here that we have on the screen of my laptop, I think I'm going to use that as the title card for this.
It's a beautiful shot.
It's a beautiful shot, but also, now we think about it, probably should have been how we ended the movie.
Yeah.
Just right here.
That's actually been my theory, is maybe even post-Vickers' death and Shaw... getting to the pod. This is how I'd edit the film. She gets to the pod, she opens it up, you know, she steps inside, and then she receives a communique from David. Like, you know, Elizabeth, are you there?
Mm.
And that's where you cut the film.
Yeah.
That's how I'd cut the film.
So I think it's probably... So what are we at? 107 of 118 minutes, I think.
I know, it goes with 10 minutes still.
It's 10 minutes too long. It's literally just 10 minutes too long. I think cut those out, and you actually have way more impact. And those 10 minutes... go into the next movie and also keep Vickers alive. For fuck's sake, guys, why you do this to me? You'd be such a great character and you take her away.
As I was rewatching the movie, remembering back to you saying about Vickers' uniform, that expensive material uniform. And I'm looking at the movie and I'm looking at how it plays on screen. I'm there going, you spent way too much money on that for very little effect.
They must have had a ridiculous costume budget, because I was just talking about this in the other minute I recorded, that they have two layers to the EVA suit, that you have the orange.
Those suits are amazing.
Incredible. And then you cover that with just the plain blue one.
Hmm.
What movie says, okay, yes, go ahead, make two layers for a costume. Why do we need two layers? You never see them both.
And then you have those bubble domes, which are... ridiculously hard to make, especially because it's also an irregular bubble.
Anything bigger than, like, I don't know, a halo visor is just, I mean, we're both cosplayers, it's just a freaking nightmare. I don't think I'll bother making the actual dome thing for my David costume. Screw that.
Well, David doesn't need to.
Doesn't need it at all.
He should just be walking around with...
So we've still got a lot to talk about, but I'm just going to cut it here so that we have some equally balanced episodes, because I know every time I have a guest on, the first one's about an hour and the other one's about 10 minutes. Probably shouldn't do that anymore. So
that's fine.
Where can we find you, Simon?
Go on the Googles and look for Fanboy Crossing. I have a YouTube channel where I have the Kung Pao Minute goes up. I also have Facebook at Fanboy Crossing. I do have a Kung Pao Minute on Facebook as well. I might as well spruik my Ko-Fi and Patreon, even though no one's, like, giving me
any
money.
Is it coffee or Ko-Fi?
I don't know. I've heard it pronounced coffee, and I've heard it pronounced Ko-Fi, and I've heard it pronounced it Ko-Fi. So as long as it's not Ko-Veffi.
Ko-Fi-Fi.
Although if someone's entrepreneurial enough, they should have made a Ko-Fi-Fi payment system. But if you enjoy my stuff, you know, pay me money, but I'm also... like $5 of that's immediately going to Connor.
Yeah, technically you support one of us, you support both of us.
Exactly.
Alright, that about covers it. This is Colson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com. You know how to spell it by now. And Alien Prequels by Minute on Facebook. Although if you search Prometheus by Minute, you'll still get it. So either. And my Patreon, patreon.com/TravianDesigns. Because I forget to keep promoting what I've actually got on there each time. So, you've got Alien Covenant Minute, Tron Legacy Minute, and then...
And the tail end of Prometheus.
And the tail end of Prometheus, which you'll get that a couple of days earlier than everybody else. And soon will be Blade Runner 2049. So, because we're recording 107 now, so I guess in a few weeks, I'll be starting Blade Runner.
That's going to be weird.
Yeah, can't believe I'm already there. And just finishing Prometheus, it's coming to an end? What? Feels like it's been a marriage.
It's like four podcasts on the go. That's insane.
I am insane. Thanks to patrons Mark Bodo, Tariq William Elcott, Simon Haynes, and Graham Malcolm.